Welcome back to Vancouver. Pat Steinberg and Ryan Pike from FlamesNation.ca along with you as we continue at the 2019 NHL Draft, a draft that has now concluded. The Flames make five picks, but Mr. Pike, they don't make a trade. For the first time in Brad Treliving's tenure as general manager of the team, he comes to a draft weekend and doesn't make a deal. He even made one his first time around. The Brandon Bolig deal was his first draft day trade, but none here. It sure does sound like, I know you had a chance to chat with him, we've had a chance to chat with him, it sure does sound like it was tough sledding out there to get deals done.
Well, unless you're willing to give up a first-round pick to burn some cap space for somebody.
And I've got a question to ask you about that in just a little bit, too.
It was, I just think generally, like, pretty much all we saw was not even a ton of it. I think this is generally a draft where, you know, when he was with us, you probably said the same thing when you had him on. Brad was telling us that they had a lot of appetite to potentially move down and get a few more swings. And I think this is the type of draft where everyone would want to do that. And I think there is just a very few opportunities for teams to do that. I think that's the only trades we saw were, you know, one pick for two picks kind of thing. And we saw maybe three picks with human bodies involved, maybe four. I think I saw a few struggling. But now, you know,
there was the Hayden for Quenneville, and there was a Tom Pyatt for...
Yeah, I think that was the fourth one, because I think there was... the Marlowe, there was the...
JT Miller, Patrick Marlowe, PK Subban, and then those are the big ones, and then the two other ones were fringe NHLers were involved.
For a draft weekend, it's not really what you see, but I'm sure if anyone pops open cap-friendly now and looks at who has what for cap space, I think that's the explanation, because so few teams have the ability to do much maneuvering, and I think based on the, you know, I think, what, a month ago, everyone was talking about an $83 million cap, and now it's 1.5 less, so I think we're going to see a lot of teams who are thinking, you know, maybe we might buy this guy out. Maybe we won't. We'll see what happens. You know, I don't think teams can afford to take on a lot of cap space for anyone else without paying a premium for it. So I think we're going to see between now and June 30th a lot more buyout activity than managers really intended to do, because you know, you don't really have the ability to get somebody to help you out anymore, because unless you're willing to give a first round pick for it, I don't think it's really happening much.
What we saw from Toronto and Carolina in that deal for Patrick Marlowe going to Carolina, they had to give up, the Maple Leafs had to give up a first-round pick along with Marlowe for Carolina to take that contract on. Does that basically kill any discussion about the Flames sending Neil somewhere and adding a sweetener? Because if Toronto had to send a conditional first for 1 year of Marlowe, how much does 4 years of Neil, or in Edmonton, 4 years of Lucic, or in Vancouver, 4 years of Erickson, how much does that cost as a sweetener? I think that basically ends that conversation, doesn't it?
Well, we remember at the trade deadline, you know, when he didn't really do much of anything outside of, you know, getting the Swedish defenseman, you know, Brad Treliving was sort of mentioning how the prices were too wacky for things like Mark Stone and, you know, other, he didn't mention names, but we all know who he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think now it's sort of the same thing for buying your way out of trouble with a trade, because now it's like, okay, to get James Neal out, you're probably talking about a first-round pick and a good prospect and maybe retaining some salary. So I think a lot of these teams are going to have to just grin and bear it for another year or two, and then, you know, hopefully, you know, Elliot Friedman writing on Sportsnet.ca about the possibility of the new TV deal starting up. The NBC deal is expiring in the United States.
Yes.
So there's going to be a new TV deal based on the way rights fees have been going for a lot of things. Like the UFC just got a monster deal with ESPN. The WWE just got a big deal with the USA Network and with Fox. Live sports is pretty much the only thing that's PVR-proof nowadays. So the NHL, potentially, assuming the bubble doesn't burst the next 2 years, could get a huge windfall. And I think that's sort of one of the things, because, you know, from all accounts, the PA and the NHL are really trying to meet halfway on figuring out escrow before the labor disruption potentially happens in a year or so. And I think on one hand, this is kind of a nice sign if you're a fan of labor peace, because it shows that they're at least open to the discussion and looking at possibilities and maybe looking down at the light of the tunnel of the extra few hundred million dollars of revenue in a year or two. But in the interim, I think we're going to have a year or two of really tight salary caps and a little bit of pain for a lot of teams having to just live with the mistakes they made.
Yeah, and I think that's a good way of putting it, to live with the mistakes they've made. He's Ryan Pike from FlamesNation.ca. My name is Pat Steinberg. We're on the draft floor here in Vancouver. The 2019 NHL draft has come and gone for another year. So I believe the Flames were close. Maybe close isn't the right word. I believe the Flames were grinding. I believe the Flames were working on things. From the sources I checked in with, they were trying. They were making calls, but it was painfully quiet in response. I believe that they were trying to see if there was a taker or a biter on TJ Brody. But I wonder if the groundwork that might have been laid this weekend, we could see the fruits of that maybe in the coming week or so. Wouldn't be a surprise if all of a sudden a deal gets made and we find out that that deal gets made because of some of the things that, were started this weekend.
Yeah, and I think now that the salary cap is known, like typically, you know, the media types like us, we get the email from the NHL usually a week earlier than now saying, hey guys, here's the cap floor, here's the cap ceiling, go nuts. And that's exactly what's communicated to the teams, too. And it being a year later, or a week later than usual, makes me think that a lot of the dominoes that topple, we're going to see topple 4, 5, 6, 7 days later than they typically do, which would happen to fall, you know, right around the buyout deadline, right around, you know, when teams are really starting to have heavy talks with the unrestricted free agents. So I think that's going to be really interesting. I think the next 8 days are going to be fascinating from a hockey ops perspective, because I think we're going to see buyouts. I think we're going to see trades in advance of things. I think we're going to see teams try to get creative, because, you know, if no one has cap space right now, so they're going to have to get creative.
Yeah, and you know, the Flames, from a cap space perspective, they're not even in the same scenario as a Toronto or a Tampa Bay or a Montreal. I was thinking PK Subban still in Montreal or a Nashville. Like those were teams that were in much more difficult cap scenarios. So I guess it's not a surprise when it's all said and done that the deals that we saw made. I talked to Brad Treliving about this, and you know, he's like, yeah, all three of the significant deals that were made here were all financially driven. Nashville getting all $9 million of Subban's cap hit off of their books. Obviously, Toronto clearing the $6+ million of Marleau, but having to give up a pretty penny to do so. And even Tampa Bay, who got nice return and also got $5.25 million worth of cap relief by trading JT Miller. It shouldn't be a surprise that all three of the significant deals were all cap driven this time around.
Yeah, and I think, you know, granted, it feels bad comparing Brad Treliving's work to a lot of the work that some of the GMs are doing now, because let's be honest, it's a whole new world. Like, if Johnny Gaudreau happened to become a restricted free agent this year compared to 3 years ago, his numbers might be starting with different digits entirely.
For sure.
But, you know, you got to give Treliving credit. He grinds on, you know, he's a grinder. He grinds on people. He's a tough negotiator. Agents I've spoken to, you know, really respect the guy, but also kind of wish he wasn't such a meanie to them. But at the same point, Johnny Gaudreau at 6'7", 5", signed the day before the season started because Johnny just wanted to play. In retrospect, it's an absolute bargain, but it's such a smart move for the team, because looking at the Flames cap situation, you know, outside of, you know, they have, I think, 16 million and change of cap space if you only look at people who can't go through waivers are definitely on the team. And the only really significant number they're going to have, like probably half of that, half-ish, goes to Tkachuk, and then they got to sign goalies and Mangiapane and, you know, some guys like that. So it's if they do nothing, they're probably okay. They have very little wiggle room for making trades at the deadline or doing any kind of, you know, maneuvering if somebody gets hurt and they need to make a move. But compared to a lot of the other teams, like, I don't, what's Toronto going to do? I have no idea how they're going to get their guys signed. Like,
even with
all the moves. So I think there's so many GMs that basically are painted into a corner. And Brad's in a situation where if he does nothing, he's probably fine. I don't know if he's content just being probably fine, which is why I expect some moves in the next week, because that's just what he is. That's just what he does. I don't think he's going to be content going into the regular season with $1 million in cap room. Mm-hmm. That won't work. But going forward, I think there's so many dominoes left to fall next week.
I don't know if Brad said this to you, because I didn't hear his meeting with the rest of the media at the wall. But when he joined me here, his main thought was, or one of my main takeaways, rather, was that, okay, yeah, he was trying, he was making phone calls, they were really working to see if they could make a deal, and he was actively trying to acquire more picks. That's one of the big takeaways for him, is that they ended up making 5 selections, and the Flames wanted to make more than just 5 picks. Ideally, they weren't able to do that, but ideally they were looking to come away from here with maybe 7 players, 8 players taken.
And I think that's sort of what they need to do, because if you look at, you know, look at last year. Last year they had 0 picks in the first 3 rounds, and, you know, they had to make 3 in the fourth, I think, because they wanted to catch up a bit, get some depth. Year before, they only had Yusuf Alamaki in the first three rounds. So 1 pick in the first 3 rounds, the preceding 2 drafts. So they made 2 this time, and I think they got good value where they did. You know, the Dustin Wolf pick, I will scream to the mountaintops that I thought that was a fantastic pick. You know, when Brad talked to us, he was making the comment, well, you know, he's the best goalie in the, you know, he had the best save percentage in the entire.
938!
Yeah, he had the best save percentage in the entire Western Hockey League. He, you know.
Oh, sorry, 936.
Oh,
936.
No, that's just too bad.
How dare
then.
I?
It's 0.02 down, so he's a terrible goalie now. He's just not a big dude. That's the only knock on him. He has insane, like, perversely good numbers. You know, if he was, you know, Brad, you made a comment, this is terrible for radio, but he sort of put his fingers, you know, a little bit together and said, if he was this much taller, he would have gone way, way earlier. And his numbers say he should have been a third rounder. The fact that he's not particularly big slides him back. And I, you know, if you're the Flames and you, let's be honest, the Flames have made conventional goalie drafting choices for years. 2012, John Gillies, big dude, athletic, competitive, hasn't really worked out yet. He's had some injuries. Some of it's not his fault, but sometimes just guys don't work out. 2014, Mason McDonald, big, tall, competitive guy, good pedigree, hasn't worked out yet. 2016, Tyler Parsons, another big, tall, competitive guy. Like they had a prototype of, I think, what is a traditional, conventional, successful goalie, and they've gotten some from the U.S. and Canada, wherever. And so far, those swings haven't worked out. So I think it's kind of intelligent of them that they're going, well, he's not the same kind of goalie we picked before, and that might be the point. He's just good. And so instead of just sort of getting hung up on size, like that might be the theme of this year's draft, where LJ is just, you know, a competitive, you know, driven kid. Lucas Fouque?
Fouque? Okay. I talked to him. He says it's Fouque.
Fouque.
That's what he told us is how you pronounce it. So I'll go with that.
Let's go.
So
if he Lucas says that's Fouque. How, but yeah, like Lucas Fouque, you know, he's JD Burke from Elite Prospects sort of mentioned on Twitter. He plays sort of a power forward game. He's not a huge dude, but he sort of comes at you. And if you look at a lot of the guys they got, that's sort of the watchword there. You know, the Flames used to look for to make themselves a tougher team to play against by going, let's go get Brandon Bolig, let's go get Brian McGrath, and let's go get these guys. And it worked for a period of time, but the game has changed. And I think now they're really doing a good job sort of, you know, with an eye towards how the game is going and how the game might keep going. You get some smaller guys. You get some guys who, you know, might give up an inch or two in height, but will run through a wall and, you know, drag you into the muck with them. And I think, you know, Matthew Tkachuk might be the toughest Flames player to play against. He's not a huge dude.
No.
He's about, you know, he's slightly above average in height and weight, but he's just an absolute. You can go into 30 NHL locker rooms and say, what do you think of Matthew Tkachuk? And people probably spit in the floor in disgust. But that, I think that's sort of the point. That's what they want to do.
That's right. And that's the type of player that, you know, you can win with in this league. There's no doubt about it. If they also have the other things, like the good and
skilled and that type of stuff. I forget which scouter I'm stealing this joke from, and I apologize in advance, but at the end of the playoffs, they don't give out a sportsmanship, a miscongeniality trophy. They give out a Stanley Cup, and it's basically, you know, one team gets the Stanley Cup and 30 teams get nothing. And I think the teams that tend to win Stanley Cups are the teams that figure out ways to get a little bit more on the margin of their roster, and the ways you get a little bit more from the margin of your roster are find guys that maybe some teams are like, he's a little bit small, he's a little bit this, he's
right.
A little bit that. And I think the Flames this year, you know, they had the first round, they had a late first, and you're probably going to have to do, you know, a bit of, you know, mucking around, because by the time you get to the late first, you're going to find guys that might have some warts in their game, but are still pretty good. And the further back you get, the more warts you're going to find. But it's about finding the ones you can live with. And I think, you know, talking to Todd and talking to Brad, I think they found 5 guys they're absolutely thrilled to have, because they have traits in their game that they think identify them with the Calgary Flames.
It's quite crazy. When they announced Dustin Wolf as Calgary's final pick, I was just kind of like, yeah, well, there's another forward. And it was just like automatic, because apparently that's all the Flames take is forwards. But no, Dustin Wolf's a goaltender. But prior to that, 13 consecutive picks had been forwards. That goes back to 2017, where their first pick was Yusuf Alamaki. The rest of that draft, forwards. all of last year, albeit with not a lot of picks, all forwards, and the first four picks of this draft prior to Wolf getting selected, forward. So between Valimaki and Wolf, a D-man and a goaltender getting selected, 13 straight picks as forwards. They certainly have stocked up the cupboards in that regard.
Yeah, and I think they'll keep doing that. They, you know, they've been kind of smart with the backfilling through through Europe. Like they, you know, they have Alexander Yalison starting with the organization. I think there'll be like five Russians at Dev Camp this year. Bunch of Swedes. Like we're gonna have to learn
Russians.
You and I are gonna have to go.
Organization.
I think we should just go and get some Rosetta Stone and learn some basic Russian phrases just so that the guys don't feel. But I think you know it's something they hadn't done in years, and you know they're finding. You know the I know Derek McKinnon and. The new European scout Robert Neuhauser, you know, talking to scouts I know in Europe, they were seeing these guys all over the place. Like they were, you know, identifying guys. Like that's how they found David Rittich. Derek McKinnon going to a Czech league game looking for Daniel Preibel, going, this goalie's pretty good. Sent some video to Jordan Siglett. Talked to a couple of the other pro scouts. They took a longer look at him. And I think that's what they did with all these Russians, where you know they have a bunch of guys who are coming off contracts at the right time. They went, okay, here's how we identify these guys. And you know between the pro scouts and the amateur scouts, you know they've really leaned on the European guys the last couple of years, and it seemed to have worked pretty well.
Well, I thought Todd Button. I don't know if he told this to you guys or not, but Nikolaev is Podkolzin's center iceman on the same team. And, of course, Podkolzin goes number 10 to Vancouver in the first round. Nikolaev goes 88 to Calgary in the third round.
I think they played together at the, I believe, the Hlinka, the U18s, and the World Junior A Championship.
World Junior A, yeah. And so those are the three. And by all accounts, they were dominant together. And Nikolaev's kind of the centerman, the cerebral guy to go along with the extremely skilled Podkolzin. So, I mean, they chose a good Russian player, and it just... We're just not used to it, because under Daryl Sutter, Russian players never got selected. Even under Jay Feaster, we didn't see a lot of Russian players selected. Over the last few years, we've seen more and more Russian products re-enter the Flames organization, and they're tapping a market that had been untapped in Calgary for quite some time.
And let's be honest, like, you know, there's always, everyone's going to be a little bit gun-shy about Russians because of the so-called Russian factor. There's no transfer agreement with the Russian Federation right now, so the getting players here is always going to be sort of a dodgy situation. We'll see what happens in the future, but I think the interesting thing for me is, you know, Nikolaev, in 2 years when his contract with Yaroslavl's up, he'll be able to come over here scot-free. At the same time, in 2 years, maybe Zagadulin's on the team. Maybe Yellison's on the team. Like, I think the fact that they're getting some of these guys in the system. Yeah, exactly. The fact that they're getting some of these guys in the system means that, you know, he won't have to try to imagine a person like him succeeding because potentially he could see them. Like, if you're a Flames player, like, say, you know, if you're Linus Lindstrom or, you know, Lucas Folk coming into the organization, you can see Michael Backlund, and he's been a lifer here. You know, he spent, what, this is 12, 13 years in the organization.
07 draft, I believe?
Yeah, the 07. So it's like 12 years ago he got drafted. And, you know, it shows, you know, it's like, okay, the team, you know, a lot of the same development people are still in place, a lot of the same scouts. And I think it sort of says to Swedish players and Finnish players, you can see tons of players who are like you who have succeeded. And I think for Russian players, it's been really hit and miss. I think, what, the last significant one might have been Oleg Saprykin. And that's like 20 years ago. So it's tough. But now, if you're building that bridge, even if it's not something that you definitely need to have, it gives you an avenue to potentially get players who might not have signed with you originally to give you a chance.
Okay, Ryan Pike from FlamesNation.ca is with us. What's happening on Flames Nation as the draft is all wrapped up in terms of coverage that is already published and content that is still to come? What are we talking about?
Oh, Lordy. Well, Pat Steinberg's been writing a ton for us this week. In addition to Patrick Steinberg, our news team, Christian Timberry, and others have been going through doing breakdowns of every pick. I'm in the middle of transcribing several interviews we've done. You know, we talked to Peltier yesterday. We talked to Nikolaev today through his translator. He's an interesting cat. We're gonna have breakdowns of this draft with Treliving and with Todd Button. And then starting tomorrow, we're looking into some of the other things. We're gonna have a look at the Calgary Hitmen prospects that got drafted today. A couple of them went, and some players that people were a little bit, re-entry guys, so they might not have necessarily gone in a traditional year, but this is kind of a weird year for the draft. And then tomorrow's sort of going to be a nice palate cleanser. We're looking at the cap. We're looking at the rule changes. So a nice breakdown of that. There's been a lot of stuff. It's been a very newsy weekend, despite not a lot of big things happening. A lot of little process things that might not be significant right away. But and then, of course, you know, what, Monday we have, I don't think anything happens Monday. Tuesday's...
Is Monday not qualifying offers?
Tuesday's qualifying offers.
Tuesday's qualifying offers.
So Tuesday's qualifying offers, the last Hall of Fame class before Jerome McKinley goes in 2020. Spoilers. And then...
How dare you spoil it.
And then I believe the schedule comes out Tuesday, too. So everyone just take Monday off to relax, and then there'll be a whole lot of stuff Tuesday. I think it's going to be the beginning of a very newsy week in a lot of different ways.
He's Ryan Pike from FlamesNation.ca. Good stuff all weekend, man. Get home safe.
Oh, goodness. I have an 8 a.m. flight, so hopefully my roommates can just nudge me awake and shove me out the door so I don't miss my cab.
It's better than the 6:10 I had out of Las Vegas on Thursday. That was an adventure.
No one in their right mind likes to... I've done a 9 a.m. flight out of McCarran Airport in Vegas before, and I was not in a condition to fly, and I flew anyway, and I regret it thoroughly in every pore of my body.
Never do a 6:10 a.m., ever.
I just don't book a flight in Vegas before noon.
That's a good call. Thanks, Pike. Good stuff all weekend.
Thanks, bud.